Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Real Spoilers, powered by ReviewSTL.com.
Warning, the following film discussion will ruin the ending of any movie you haven't seen. Example, Bruce Willis is dead at the end of The Sixth Sense. See how I ruined it for you? Just like that. Here are a few more.
Silent Breed is people!
I am the father.
Get it?
Real Spoilers. You've been warned.
Broadcasting from the lush but not lavish studios located in the basement of the O'Keefe Institute for Advanced Film Snarkitude, this is Real Spoilers, episode 582, The Blues Brothers 2000, which was appropriately released in 1998. It's the first of many missteps.
Is there a story behind that to why they decided to call it that?
I don't know. Like, I think... you were seeing a lot of things with 2000 starting to get slapped on them, but I honestly have no idea why in 1998 they called it Blues Brothers 2000. Like, it's like...
I get it if it's a futuristic thing.
Sure, totally.
Especially if it's released in 2000, but for Blues Brothers to call it that, I just feel like there had to be a story, or I would like to know the thought process at least.
I think, from what I can gather, it sounds like the execs mucked around with this film a lot, and so they wanted a sequel, but they didn't want a sequel, and they were trying. My guess is because the first one, we talked about this a little bit at the end of the last episode, was, with the exception of some F-bombs, was, fairly family-friendly. You know,
yeah,
and that
yeah.
they were trying to make this appeal to a younger demographic, which is, which I think is why you get the addition of the cousin Oliver of the Blues Brothers franchise.
Oh my gosh, Scrappy-Doo.
Yeah. And
he really is Scrappy-Doo. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I think that, the goal originally was for that to be Macaulay Culkin. So I guess it could have been worse.
Macaulay Culkin in 1998?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. I know that's...
I feel like he'd be way older.
He would have been 20
kid.
Or something.
Yeah, that's true. Also, I don't know how long this was in production for, but I know that it, they...
Like, Macaulay Culkin, dancing in Michael Jackson music video age, yes, but,
right.
Yeah, that would have been way later.
Yeah, I don't know. My reading tells me that they originally wanted Macaulay Culkin for this.
No, totally. I hear you.
Yeah,
been 18.
He'd have been 18.
When this came out,
totally.
So it's like.
But
no, thank you.
But I guess let's before we get too far into that, let's go around the table and everyone can introduce themselves.
This is Joe.
This is Kevin.
And this is Tom. Quick shameless plugs. Don't forget, we're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeart, TuneIn, wherever you get your podcasts. You can find us while you're there. Be sure and subscribe so you never miss an episode. If you want to leave a review, that would be nice as well. You can also find us on the internet at facebook.com/realspoilers. While you're there, like the page, join the group, and of course, check out our Patreon at patreon.com/realspoilers, where for $5 a month, you get all sorts of bonus content, and you help us out, and we like you extra. So, Blues Brothers 2000.
So if you just want to go back and listen to our other episode...
I would like to sum up this movie. I have a perfect story that sums this up.
Okay.
So
yeah.
I watched both these movies on Stars. So before you get into this one, if you've never seen it, if you would like to go watch them and you have the Stars subscription, or you can do the 30-day free.
How do you like that subscription? Two Stars.
Stars?
Yeah.
I paid like $3 for 3 months, so I guess it's okay.
Okay.
I mean,
okay. I just like, what's their selection like? I've been toying with it.
Well, I mean, it's like I would have had to pay for these if I didn't have it. So, I mean, there's a pretty decent amount of movies on there. So, okay. You know, and they've got their original TV shows. But anyway, jump on that trial or whatever if you want to watch them. So here's the deal. They've got Blues Brothers and Blues Brothers 2000, to watch as a part of the Starz catalog. I watched the first Blues Brothers movie, and it rolled into High Anxiety. It's like, if you liked this movie, you'll like High Anxiety. I'm like, because I like
the only connection I can make between those two movies is that the piano player from the Blues Brothers is also in that movie.
I mean, yeah, there could be a small connection, but I just thought, like, you know, it's supposed to be like all these services, Netflix and all that is like, you know, if you like this, here's a relative thing to roll into. And so I get up to go get a drink or something. And I go back in and I'm like, why is Mel Brooks in Blues Brothers 2000? Like, it was so strange.
One can only hope.
I know. And then I back out of it because I didn't realize what I was watching, and I back out of it, and it's like on the continue watching or recently or whatever, it's like Blues Brothers and then High Anxiety next to it. So I just think that perfectly sums it up, that they have Blues Brothers 2000 and they don't even suggest you to roll into it from Blues Brothers.
Yeah, that's like, pretty funny. No. We'll take care of you.
Yeah.
Oh.
They don't want to damage the brand anymore.
Right. It's just, this is, I get it. I feel like that you could do the adventures of the Blues Brothers, right? Like, that makes, that tracks in a form or another. But you
well,
need
first
the
of all,
Blues
this
Brothers.
Movie, this movie's called, is Blues Brother.
Right.
It, yeah. And you need them together for this to work.
That's like the deal is, it's a play on words. Their last name is Blues. Like,
yeah.
So they're literally Blues Brothers, and you have one of them.
Kind of touching on when, so it's basically, this movie opens the exact same way the first one opens.
I will say, out of everything in this movie, this opening scene is the only thing they got right.
Yeah, I agree.
I loved the fact that they redid it. He's sitting there waiting for his brother to pick him up, and he never shows up. And I thought it was a great callback that Frank Oz is now the warden.
Yeah, I thought that was
a brilliant play. Like, that I appreciated. I'm like, okay,
we're
off to the races.
One of the I think the guard that walks him across is the same, too. His screen credit is literally same guard. And that is the biggest laugh you will get out of this movie. But like this opening scene, though, as much as I honestly, like, I love this opening scene because I had never seen this movie until yesterday.
Neither had I.
And so I was like, this, when this movie starts, I was just like, well, I've heard this movie's bad. And I'm like, boy, this opening scene. I mean, it's a weird way to start a comedy because it's also very touching. Just the image
it's a gut punch.
They walk out Elwood, and then they realize that Elwood doesn't know that Jake has died. And then Elwood is waiting to get picked up in the same way that he picked up Jake when he got out. And like, and then Jake obviously doesn't show up, and he just stands there like a faithful dog.
Yeah.
And he's just, you know, like, basically, my brother will not forget me. I just have to stand here and wait. He will for sure come for me. And it's like, it's just such a gut. But it's as good as that scene is, it's also like, this is supposed to be a musical comedy. It's a little bit of an odd way to start your film.
Well, and the thing that really threw me off, too, so I knew nothing about this going into it. I presumed John Goodman was playing Jake. Like, I just, you know, from the poster, from,
right.
Like, my understanding
was
that,
flip him out.
Right. I mean, they just recast him, and it's not like an in bad taste thing. I mean,
right.
John Belushi died, obviously, and so they get another great actor to play the same character. Like, because I, in my head, not having even seen Blues Brothers until this podcast, I was like, how are you going to do a Blues Brothers movie without the Blues Brothers? That would be silly, wouldn't it?
So,
like,
I landed in a similar place having not seen it. Like, I didn't think that they would be. And have enough, you know, be in poor taste enough to just pretend like they could recast the role. But I just assumed that they'd be like, oh, this is your long lost brother, or this is a cousin, and
sure.
And he would fill the same slot without actually literally playing the same character. But
which they kind of do, but don't do it. Yeah, it's right? Really like the cop is that exact what you exactly what you just described.
Right.
But that doesn't Miles happen Dyson? Until the very end. Yes.
Okay, because I'm yes. like, wow, Miles Dyson's in this movie.
Yes, it is. Yes,
they.
But yeah. You're right, Tom. Like that, you're absolutely right. It's like, okay, we obviously can't have Belushi, so we'll just say that you know, John Goodman is his other brother. You know, or but they don't do that. They get
right.
the bartender
it's,
from.
It's
the
weird.
Club.
It's like they recast three people to play.
Yeah.
To yeah. play him, right? Because you yeah. end up with. You end up with John Goodman. You end up with the long lost brother Cab, and then you end up with the kid Buster.
The kid,
and so like it's just it's a very odd choice, and you really the more you watch the film and the more I think about it, the more I'm like that kid really was had to have been forced on them because they just do not know what to do with having this kid.
Oh, here. They put a kid in it so that kids could watch this movie and go, oh, I can be a part of the Blues Brothers now.
Yeah, and
absolutely. Yeah, and that was a token kid.
It's not like Spider-Man. We're like, oh, I can anybody behind the mask. Like, nobody wants to be a Blues Brother who's a kid.
Right.
Know?
Well,
like, that's
I think that was
our age would do.
But I think that was the goal, though, right? Is
that
they,
was to pull kids into
oh,
this
sure,
movie.
Sure, totally, yeah. totally, yeah. yeah.
The other mistake they make with this kid, I think, is that they don't cast a musical prodigy. Like if they were going to
yeah
if they were gonna pull a kid in, and I know this predates School of Rock, but they should have School of Rocked it. Like they like there's
so here's where's Kenny Wayne Shepherd?
Well, there's Johnny Lang
in this day
they're
age.
The same guy right
well, oh right yeah
but
right I guess
Johnny Lang's
so
in
that's
the movie.
that's the blonde kid right
yeah the janitor okay. and the phone sex scene,
I was
yeah.
like, I was like, who the hell is that?
Yeah.
So I think the kid that is blonde, who's like the surfer kid, I think I yeah. mean,
that's
I
Johnny
that
Lang,
Kenny Wayne Shepherd.
Yeah, I
oh, it is.
It's Johnny Lang, but in your defense, I always get Johnny Lang and Kenny Wayne Shepherd mixed up. But it is Johnny Lang. I looked it up.
But who okay. the hell is Johnny Lang?
He was like a
blues guitarist,
like a kid prodigy, like he.
But see. Yeah, but that to what I was saying last episode and why I said it's more so in this one, they kept hitting you over the head with cameos where I don't know yeah. any of these people. And so it was frustrating that they would keep being like, oh, you know, the lowly janitor, look at this guy. Like, because I'm like, who the hell is this person? I felt like this movie yeah, was called Blues Brothers Cameo.
The ones that I recognized was Travis Tritt, where I was like, I don't know, a country western guy.
Yeah.
He's a country western guy.
I wouldn't recognize him, though, you know?
B.B. Like, King.
Aretha, I know the name.
B.B. King, Aretha Franklin.
Sure.
They bring back basically the entire cast of the last movie, with the exception of the guys that are dead. They bring everybody.
They don't bring back
Spielberg. They don't bring back,
they don't bring back Ray Charles.
Oh, I guess they don't bring back Ray Charles. That's true.
And I don't know why. I've wondered.
That was a weird one.
Yeah.
But then they also cast about 700 other blues musicians in this movie.
Yes, that is also correct.
And it's like, I don't know who any, like I know... I figured it out because I'm like, is that Eric Clapton? Like a young Eric Clapton? Because it's from almost 20 years ago or 22
middle
years
aged.
Ago.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I know Eric Clapton and I thought that was him, but that was really one of the only people I recognized. And then I'm like, Isaac Hayes. Yeah. I'm like, okay, I know who Isaac Hayes is. But there were so many of those type of cameos in the movie to where if you were, I guess, a blues guy, it would really be cool. But to me, not even liking blues that much and the musical numbers being boring to me, then they kept focusing on all these people, like wink wink, look who we got, and the whole thing was just like, oh god, it's just not enjoyable.
Well, I will say in their defense, Johnny Lang was having a moment when this movie was
yes.
made. Like, so if you were into rock music or blues based music, you would have probably been aware of who Johnny Lang was at this point.
Sure.
You know, because he's probably 17 in this movie.
Yeah, I would say that's about right.
Yeah, so actually younger than Macaulay Culkin would have been.
Yeah, right.
And he probably would have made a better choice as a blues brother, because then he could have actually at least performed with the band.
That's what I'm saying.
Instead
yeah.
of pretending to perform with the band.
Yeah.
Right. And doing dance numbers that were atrocious.
Yes.
Yeah. So like we said, it opens up the same way, except this time he's picked up by a stripper, and she kind of brings him. I think she brings him back to the drummer from the first movie. I think has established himself as a strip club owner. And this is where Elwood kind of starts to kind of get back into the groove of things with the loss of his brother. And he's getting back behind the microphone. And there's really like where the first one had a plot, a very subtle, well, not subtle, but very paper thin plot. I don't know why he wants to. I mean, besides like putting the band back together because in memory of his brother, why is he putting the band back together?
Yeah, there was always like,
why are we doing all this?
Yeah.
What's the reason?
I was struggling with that too. I was like, did I miss it? Like, what's really the driving motivation?
I felt the same way.
Yeah.
But they never give a reason as to why they put the band back together.
They go back to the nun and she hits him with the metal rod this time or whatever. I mean, does it have something to do with
that? More like she's like, oh, you have a brother, and then also, like, you should take care of this kid. Like, that seems like a good idea for a guy that just got out of prison. But, because we all know the Catholic Church would take way better care of young boys than that. right? But it's like, oh, at some point they stumble onto this, like, oh, there's this battle of the bands thing where you have to go beat this ghost band or something.
But it's like, why?
Oh, it's so weird. This movie and again, it's way more so to me, like, felt like music videos. Like I could go watch, I could get an Eric Clapton DVD live in concert and watch him do song after song. Like, I feel like this movie was built to sell records or something.
I would have rather watched Eric Clapton.
Well, of course. Yeah, Eric Clapton, I mean, Stevie Ray Vaughan DVDs live in concert, those are awesome. Yeah,
when,
of course you would.
You know your movie is in trouble. You should take it as a sign when you are unable to get Jim Belushi to agree to be in your movie.
You ain't lying.
You know, and they want, because they wanted it to be Jim Belushi, and even though I'm not a huge Jim Belushi fan, at least there's like a biological connection that makes it feel a little less sleazy.
Walker's brother's filling in for him. And,
Totally. Yeah. but he was attached to like an ABC television show, not What About Jim, but that he couldn't get out of. So I think he wanted to do it. And he tours as the Blues Brothers, him and Dan Aykroyd. I actually saw them a few years ago. My wife danced with them on stage. But it's not the Blues Brothers band. What you get is Jim Belushi has a band called the Sacred Hearts Band, and basically for an extra probably $20,000, you can throw Dan Aykroyd into the mix, and they'll call it the Blues Brothers. But you're not actually getting, and a lot of that original Blues Brothers band has passed on now. But you're not, and then there, because there was a touring band that was called the Blues Brothers Band that would go out, and then that was like the core musicians, Matt Murphy and stuff like that. But anyway, but yeah, like when, you know, like I feel like maybe this is a total, this is not maybe, this would be a totally different movie if they could have got Jim Belushi. Like they should have waited. They waited 18 years. They should have.
I was going to say the same thing. Like, if you can wait 18 years and he's doing a television show, so he can't do it. That sounds like a pretty poor excuse, because you could have waited or done it earlier. Like, there was plenty of time.
You don't got to do the kid thing. You don't got to do this weird, you know, this weird brother thing that John Cooper plays. Like, you don't have to do any of that stuff. And you can just be like, you had a long lost brother and just roll with it, you know?
Yeah.
And that's, I think that along with what we talked about before, where there just is this, it's too polished and it just seems like there's no point to this movie.
There's no dirt to this movie.
That's the thing. I mean, you went from a gritty 80s Chicago movie to a 2000s movie, and it just it lost the appeal of that dirty, gritty city type of cityscape.
Right. And
the blues scene. This is like the movie starts off pretty much in the beginning, like they go to a Mercedes dealership. That's how clean it is. You know, it's just
to me that's the biggest misstep of this entire movie, is along with many, but the biggest one is they set up like this Cadillac, right? That Dan Aykroyd sold for a microphone. So he goes to this junkyard, and I was like, oh, he's going to get the Cadillac back.
That would have been cool.
You know, like, you know, but no, he just gets another crappy police car.
And but it's not, why? Though, that the police car he gets is not only better, but it's like, it's, it seems to have way more equipment, like it's equipped better than the original.
That's true. But I guess I just feel like that's a missed opportunity to call back to the...
I agree. To, if you would have... What a touching thing that would have been, another one of those moments in a better movie. 100%.
Yeah. There's no reason they need to get another cop car. Like I said, they should have just gotten that.
The cop car they picked for the original movie was pretty hard to find, and so that's why they switched to this different make and model.
Well, I'm saying, why not go back and get the Cadillac?
Oh, I see. Oh, that would have been a nice touch. Like,
wouldn't
but
that
I
have been?
But I think the problem there becomes that cop car in the first one became so iconic.
Yeah.
That especially with the speaker attached to it, which is maybe the only callback from the first movie we don't get.
Right.
But I just think that, like, the ideas of the Blues Brothers in something that wasn't an old beat up cop car, you know. You know. Plus, they want to check as many boxes from the first movie. I mean, we talked about how we kind of felt like Butch and Sundance, the early years or days, I can't remember which it was, kind of invented invented fan service. I mean, this movie.
Yeah.
Like, is, I mean, almost every scene in this movie is some kind of fan service. I mean, this entire movie feels like the pre-roll to a ride at a theme park.
It really does. Like, there's no, like, where the first one had, like, this heart and this soul behind it, this feels like the most corporate. This feels like the music industry.
Well, this is, that's what I'm saying. This entire movie feels like it was meant to sell records, and it's just music number to music number. The first one, even if the story was paper thin, there was enough story and enough heart and enough of the brother's story to make it interesting. And this movie is just like musical number to musical. How can we string these musical numbers together?
The first one was blues music that you find buried in a vinyl shop.
Yeah.
And this one is blues music that you buy at an airport gift shop.
Hey, can we say that this movie is the Blues Traveler of movies?
I also don't mind Blues Traveler.
I'm not a big Blues Traveler guy. They've got like two songs that I like, but
that's the thing. It's like, isn't that the pop bubblegum type of blues music compared to the classic, you know, B.B. King, the blues musicians focused on the first movie?
Yeah, I think that there was that run around this, like, 97, 98, where there was, like, that pop version of blues. So it was, like, Hootie the Blowfish and Blues Traveler and, those bands. And, of course, you know, John Popper, he lost all that weight. And then they were just like, no, we don't like you guys anymore.
But let's get the Russian mobsters involved.
Sure, why not?
Yeah, why not? So the Russian mob is shaking down the old drummer at the strip joint, and Aykroyd takes it upon himself to like deal with it.
He gets the bartender, who's John Goodman.
And they put on a show, and they realize,
you know, because every bartender that works at a club is being shaken down by Russian mobsters loves to interfere by taking their clothes off and tying them up in an alley because, smart thing to do.
And here's how you know this movie isn't working. Like, are you really going to tell me that the first movie didn't have ridiculous plot points like that? Like, it absolutely did. But you were on board. There was just something about it that from the get-go, it created a world, and you were like, I'm on board. And this one, like, every decision, you're just like, we're doing what now?
Because it's bad. It's such a bad written movie, and it's weird because it's still Aykroyd and Landis.
It's
but
so weird to think that this is the same creative team. Like,
I don't get it.
Yeah.
It's just a really bad movie.
This is kind of where Landis has fallen off the rails.
He probably had Max write it.
Oh, shut up.
School film project that he turned in.
Would you say that this is like the Monster Squad of the John Landis film?
No, I would not.
Yeah, that's
a great
assessment, Tom.
No,
I think you nailed
it. Assessment.
That's
Tom,
a perfect. No. Why, we need to stop recording. We're good.
So Max Landis is the epitome of a guy who woke up on third base and thought he hit a triple.
Right.
Yeah, sure.
So like 1988 is kind of where Landis starts to... 88 is Coming to America. And then 91 is Oscar, which I think is... I enjoy Oscar, but I get it.
You're the one.
I'm the one. Beverly Hills Cop 3 is in 94.
And that's awful.
So that's kind of where... I never saw Innocent Blood. I don't remember ever seeing that.
I don't know if I've heard of it.
I don't know. So 1994 is where he starts to hit the skids. 96 is The Stupids. 98 is Blues Brothers 2000. And then he goes and does a bunch of TV stuff. And then he does lots of TV stuff. And then Burke and Hare in 2010. And that's it.
Yeah.
That's the end of the Landis stuff. He hasn't directed anything since 2012. So, like... I get that the dude was, I think that there's something about his comedic stylings that work in the late 70s, early 80s that no longer work.
That could be like possible. He's not evolving.
I also think he's not evolving. He's not doing anything original. You know what I mean? Like I feel like he's not using those creative juices or those comedic juices, and it's not, everything is just feels kind of the same. Burke and Hare should have worked like that. Who's the
Simon
guy
Pegg.
That does all the mocap?
Simon Pegg and Andy Serkis and Simon Pegg. Yeah.
Simon Pegg as like these two dudes who just robbed graves and tried to sell the body. It's a real story. Like tried to sell rob graves. They ended up killing people to get more. But it should have worked in the John Landis world, but it just doesn't work anymore. Like, I don't know what happened, but. He killed Vic Morrow. I guess that's what happened. And those
It's interesting because sometimes when you're trying to like revive a property like this, sometimes it's very important to get the creative team back, and sometimes it's very important to find younger filmmakers that understood the original what made the original creation work. Because I think sometimes those younger filmmakers that grew up on it understand the property in ways that the people who created it didn't. They just went in and did what they did and didn't think about it. And not that they didn't think about it, but they didn't think about it deconstruct it. You know what I mean? In the same way.
Well, but they also were younger and they were making it for different reasons back then. So like Landis has become a huge Hollywood director and he's making all these big, with these big stars. And it's like, he's a little bit out of touch when you think about, he made Animal House and Blues Brothers, and you know, he's doing this as a young guy that wants to put his mark on film. And I think there's something lost when you go back and you're like, yeah, let's reboot this 18 years later. But you're not the same director, right? As when you made that 18 years ago.
Well, I think the problem is he is the same director.
He hasn't grown as a director.
He hasn't grown up. Right. Yeah. Like that's,
but if he was the same director, I feel like he would have been able to write a movie that felt similarly, but I feel like he kind of became a director for hire. You know, he's making these comedies and he's churning them out.
I completely agree with you.
And he forgot what it was like to make a passion project, you know, I want to make Animal House and make it be this hilarious, amazing movie. And I want to make Blues Brothers and these two crazy brothers that go on this mission from God. And, you know, like, I feel like he forgot what it was like to have that fire lit and make this amazing movie.
I will say that like Aykroyd and Landis both almost walked off this film because of the changes the studio was making to it. Like came real close, and it actually gets references like later deep into the movie. There's a scene where they're on the side of the road and Elwood gives the speech about, we can't stop now. Like here are all the people who didn't quit. And then he says like Robert K. Weiss, and they're all like, and the two of them are like, who the hell's that? Right. And then the movie doesn't address it. That's supposedly the executive that talked them into not walking off and quitting the film. And so
that's slick.
So, I mean, you know, I don't, as much as I don't like this movie, in fairness to Landis, I don't know that we could say it's not a passion project. I feel like. Like they had to hustle to get this thing made. The original one had a budget of like $24 million. This one, 18 years later, had a budget of $28 million, and that $28 million counts the fact that Aykroyd and Goodman both were working for scale just so they could get this movie made. So, yeah. You know, yeah. And they,
I mean, yeah.
So, I mean, I get that it doesn't feel like you're seeing the passion on screen, and that's largely because you're not, but I don't know that it's because they don't have passion for it, you know?
Okay. Yeah. Fair enough.
I don't know. I guess, as we're talking about this, I'm thinking of like Clerks to Clerks 2.
Yeah.
You know, like there's a degree of, I used it last time. There's a degree of like punk rock with Clerks.
Mm-hmm.
Where Clerks 2 feels like it is those, you know, because it's all the same creative, it's all Kevin Smith. There is this feeling of growing up and becoming a different filmmaker.
Right.
And I feel like that is kind of, you know, like we said, it's there's a story here that could be to be told of like an older blues brother who's back on his own, you know, like yeah. There's a story there.
Totally.
But maybe you're right. Maybe they were trying to tell that story and
they must have just been trying to sell records though. This movie had to have
Maybe they weren't. Or maybe the studio was.
That's what I'm saying. I
get what you're saying, but at the same time, like this isn't the kind of music that was burning up the charts in 1998. You know what I mean? So it's like I don't really know that they thought that they were going to sell a bunch. I'm not saying they didn't think they were going to sell any records, but like,
but why even make this movie? Why in 1998 do you make a sequel to Blues Brothers without one of the, like, I'm just trying to wrap my head around why yeah. this got made. That's all.
I think it's, you know, I think Aykroyd wanted to be relevant. I think he wanted to have a hit. I mean, you know, it was just about 3 or 4 years before this that he pulled the cone heads out of Mothballs and tried to resurrect that.
So it's weird that so that works for me. Like 1994 cone heads is a thing that like that was a big movie for my generation.
You might have saw it a lot, but it was not a big movie. That movie was a box office disaster.
I did not see it in theaters, but it was definitely like a cable VHS rental, like that was played a lot, like at, you know, parties or whatever. That was a big movie for us.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it only made $20 million domestic, $21 million. So
I definitely remember watching a lot of it.
I will also say that it follows the comedian version model of Blues Brothers 2000, and that you know, it stars Dan Aykroyd and Jane Curtin, obviously, as mm-hmm. Beldar and Primat. But you also
the older sister from Dazed and Confused.
Oh yeah, yeah, because that was originally Lorraine Newman, but she's not playing the. I mean, she'd have been 45, so that would have made it rough.
Sure.
But from a comedic standpoint, like it does the same thing with comedians that Blues Brothers 2000 does with blues musicians. I mean, in this movie, you get you get Michael McKean, you get David Spade, Chris Farley, Sinbad, Michael Rogers, Eddie Griffin, Phil Hartman, Adam Sandler, Jason Alexander, Dave Thomas, Lorraine Newman, Garrett Morris, Drew Carey, Kevin Nealon, Jan Hooks, Parker Posey, Joey Lauren Adams, Julia Sweeney, Ellen DeGeneres, Tim Meadows, John Lovitz. I mean, you know.
So basically everyone who was on SNL at that time.
Yeah, and Tom Arnold. So, I mean,
well, they can't all be winners.
Yeah, it's following the same template.
Yeah. It just, I don't know, I guess I feel like that one, it was that and Wayne's World, and like, so there was like all of that SNL run was coming back when I was at that age. But
yeah.
This one, like, I remember when this came out, and it was just like, I have no interest in this whatsoever. Like even as much as I love Blues Brothers back then,
right?
I had no interest in seeing something without Belushi.
Totally, yeah.
So they're getting the band back together. This is another callback to the scene with Matt Murphy where they go to a Mercedes dealership, and it turns out that Aretha Franklin accepted, you know, brought Matt back.
She had much business at the cafe with no employees. She was able to buy a Mercedes dealership.
Yes, correct. So. This is where they do respect. And finally, you know, he acquiesces to Aretha Franklin, and he looks like a scolded dog, and she's like, you know what, forget it. If you're just gonna act like that, go ahead and go. And he was like, all right, and he takes off. And of course, the buddy from the first movie, she's like, yeah, you can go too. And he immediately snatches up his trombone and they take off. And that's, I mean, it is the exact same plot, beat for beat.
They're running from the Russians instead of from the Nazis.
Right. They're running from the, so.
But are kind of running from Nazis, because it's like that Confederate loving military militias after them.
Yeah, we get to see the Daryl Hammond, Confederate guys.
It's Daryl Hannah.
So just real quick, I put together a list of all the repeat gags that are recycled. So we have the nun hitting him for cussing.
Yep.
We have Aretha and Matt Guitar Murphy fighting about whether or not he should go join the bands. We have the cops chasing them. The Nazis are swapped out for militia members. Just the whole getting the band back together. Instead of dropping a car, they drop a boat.
Mm-hmm.
They're forced to perform a country song in order to keep an angry audience happy. The church service musical scene, I mean, is just shot for shot practically. And then it even ends with the same gag of the preacher converting someone, like it, you know, mm-hmm. in the same way that Jake was converted and came up with the idea to get the band back together. They convert.
Don't forget that they totally copied the plot point of the 130-year-old voodoo witch.
Was that? That
no,
was
what the hell
movie.
Was that?
Oh, yeah, no, totally. And then also when they go to perform in front of the crowd, the crowd like it completely like crosses their arms, unimpressed with them as an act.
They no sell it the whole time.
Yeah, and then it ends with this giant musical number in front of a crowd that's predisposed to not like them. So I mean, it's, you know, and then in the ultimate irony that
I thought you were going to say ultimate cut, and I was like, I'm not watching this again, Tom.
The original story pitch had Elwood and Mighty Mac and Jim Belushi as Brother Z raising money to refurbish the old orphanage, but the studio turned it down because they said it was too close to the original story.
Oh,
that's ridiculous.
Right.
This movie is like, this is,
I got to,
like,
tell you, that plot works better than the one that we got.
It does. Cause like, if you're going to make it this much of a retread, then just own it, you know, but this kind of harkens back. Yeah. We've talked about this in the past about how some of the sequels you would get before the advent of home video would be just kind of retreads of the original, because you couldn't go see the original easily in the
True.
Way that you
this
can
is Airplane
today.
Too.
Right. And where this one is like, it's 1998. I mean, VHS has been
DVDs, brother.
I mean, VHS has been around for, you know, has been a stalwart for, you know, 15 years. And we're moving, transitioning into DVDs. And like, there's no problem. You can see Blues Brothers whenever you want. And
well, and remember, I mean, even worse, like, that made no sense is after this, Hangover 2 did the same thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's way past the advent of DVDs. And it's like, why would a movie drudge up the exact same thing? I mean, just because it worked the first time, you know,
The Hangover is a weird franchise because you're right. 2 does do the exact same thing, but then 3 does something completely different.
I never saw 3. I was so turned off by 2.
I do recommend
3's not bad.
I like 3 a lot.
If 3 had been
hated 2, I couldn't believe how.
And you were right too. But but if 3 was 2,
it's a different story.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just, like, they burned me. They made me go see the same movie. It was so unoriginal, like, the same exact jokes. I'm like, why would I pay you any money to see 3, you know?
Yeah.
Well, the way we have can do streaming, I'm sure you can find 3 for free somewhere. And I do recommend it. Like, it's
just one
good.
Of those movies that, like, I don't want to, kind of like how you didn't want to watch this. I'm like, oh, I have no interest. But someday.
Guess
I'll
what, Kevin?
Someday.
Next week, Hangover 1, 2, and 3. That's what we're doing. and, like, you know, it's just, it was hard to watch because the musical number, there's no, the thing about blues music is there is a degree of soul
to it. Yes.
Yeah. There's
commercial
passion and emotion. And this just like, I mean, when BB King gets up there, I feel like BB King gets a pass because that dude is, I mean, the king of blues.
Yeah.
So like that gets a pass for me because it's like, okay, it's BB King. That's fine. I can appreciate that.
I thought the guy at the phone sex line, I thought that number, he did a pretty good job.
Isn't that a guy from the first movie? Am I wrong?
I don't think so.
Yes, you were wrong.
Oh.
Yeah.
I thought it was.
No, that is, that number was performed by Eddie Floyd and Wilson Pickett.
Okay. Again,
but like I thought that was okay. Like I at least thought it was something a little bit different, and it had that kind of double entendre to it. Like I thought that was, you know, okay. But most of the numbers didn't feel very clever or original, and they felt like they were just music videos. And that's why I started to get so bored during the second one when it went from musical to number to musical number that I started doing the 10-second skip because I'm like, just, you know, I didn't want to totally like go 3 minutes forward because I'm like, is there any plot point? I don't want to skip that, but I don't want to sit here and watch a music video. I'm just like, skip. Okay, nope, no. Okay, end of the song. Good. We're
and
done.
I know you're not a fan of the music, but like, as someone who's not a fan of the music, I mean, could you feel the difference in the passion for the music between the two movies?
Yeah, because I didn't skip anything in the first movie.
Yeah, like in the first, you know, in the first movie, it's like, the music is, and it's not like these aren't good musicians, but it just it's like it's reveling too much, especially that last 20 minutes.
Oh my god.
When it's just like everybody takes a line
hour,
and
I
yeah.
thought that I thought we had stopped time.
That yeah. that last song when they try to get 50 different people to sing the same song.
Yeah.
They were horrible. Like there were a couple of them that sounded okay.
Yeah.
A lot of them sounded like out of tune and off key. Like it was crazy that they tried to like, okay, now you sing a part. Now you sing a part. Now you like, oh my God.
And those are all like, that's a murderer's row of talent. Like here, like it's like, here's the people in that scene. You get Jeff Skunk Baxter, who's from the Doobie Brothers. He's also an astrophysicist. You get Gary U.S. Bonds, Eric Clapton, Clarence Clemons, the saxophone player from the E Street Band, Bo Diddley, Isaac Hayes, Dr. John, B.B. King. B.B. King was also the guy who owned the junkyard at the beginning.
Yeah, he was the junkyard.
Yep. Yeah.
The junkyard.
Billy Preston, who's oftentimes called the fifth Beatle, Lou Rawls, Paul Schaefer, Travis Tritt.
Paul Schaefer was horrible in this movie.
Paul Schaefer is horrible in everything.
Yeah.
He's the worst. I can't stand Paul Schaefer.
Travis Tritt, Jimmy Vaughn
from
Fabulous Thunderbirds, Stevie Ray Vaughan's brother, Grover Washington Jr., and Steve Winwood. I mean, there's some other names that are lesser known, but are probably, if you're a music nerd, you know them. But those are the names that
I knew those were people. Even though I don't listen to all their music, I knew they were people. And the fact that that song was so terrible, it was cringeworthy. Like,
the only memorable thing that comes out of this movie is it's the reason Paul Schaefer is bald.
It's the reason?
He shaved his head for this movie and he never went back. He left
You're
his head
me.
Shaved for the rest of his career. Yeah.
Oh,
my dad had like an unnatural hatred for Paul Schaefer because when he was in the SNL band, it would drive him crazy because he hated Paul Schaefer and he hated the guy who came after Paul Schaefer because he felt like it was about them.
Yeah.
Like they were trying to be part of the show and he like every time they'd come, he was like, oh, I could hear him grumble.
Well, what did he think about Letterman?
Yeah.
I mean, he watched Leno cause you know,
he's an old guy.
Gross.
Yeah. That's so gross.
But Paul Schaefer ends up as he's a cast member for like one season on SNL. Like but like when they were still trying to keep it alive and before they officially like rebooted it and Lorne Michaels left, I think it was like that 1979-80 season, Paul Schaefer ends up a cast member, Harry Shearer ends up a cast member before coming back in the Billy Crystal cast. Because in all those Bill Murray Lounge Singer sketches, like it's Paul Schaefer's on piano on all that stuff. Paul Schaefer also wrote It's Raining Men, so in case you were curious.
Right. Well, Paul Schaefer
really?
maybe needs to maybe he needs to stick to the piano, because him trying to act in a movie like this,
yeah,
is
he was
atrocious.
He was pretty bad.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. So they the band is back together. They go and they we should say that he is Elwood was told by the nun that he has a that Cab Calloway had a son. And that's why he was at the orphanage, is he felt so bad about leaving this boy behind that he tried to raise all these different kids. So, of course, Elwood, who, like, has this weird childlike reaction that he has another, you know, he's like, oh, so I have a brother. And the nun's like, no, leave him alone. Like, he wanted, you know, he doesn't know anything any better. So he goes, you know, of course, Elway. No, that's not right. Dan Aykroyd goes to see the guy, and he turned out to be like a lieutenant or a corporal in this police department. And that's how the police get involved, is he steals his wallet, takes the $500, gets the cop car, but gives the wallet back. And now the cop had like, for whatever. So when
like the cops are chasing
name,
him the whole down, just
for
like,
no reason,
just, but just like the same reason, the first one, like when the cops are chasing them, this is the same thing. It's because he stole the wallet. Now the cops are after him. I mean, it's the same plot beat, except for the wallet thing.
Yeah, I guess, but like, at least in the first one, they're like, "Oh, you ran away from being arrested." Like in this one, they're just like, "He took $500, but then gave the wallet back." So it's like, but so now we're leading a nationwide manhunt because
for $500
for $500 yeah. bucks
is like, this cop's like a misdemeanor? Mad. Like
it's well, it used to be 500 and over was a felony. I don't know what it is now.
Oh, he should have left a penny.
I know, yeah, right. But, like, I don't understand. So he runs his name. He runs both of the Blues Brothers' names. And it's like, he's been in jail. So all of those things that you want to arrest them for, he hasn't done. You can't.
Right,
he's not doing that. He's just, it's just to show him, like, the type of character he is. He's looking up, like, their history.
I took it as like, he's like, you got all these warrants.
No,
he shouldn't. Okay.
It was just to show how crazy they were. Like, he's trying to understand who is this guy trying to say, hey, you're my brother. I don't really want anything to do with you.
right. So they end up making it to, they have to do like a battle of the bands. And so they get to the voodoo priestess.
Yeah, the weirdest. This is where, I know the first movie's crazy with phone booths exploding and flamethrowers and rockets. It had a certain sensibility, like the tone, whatever. It totally worked with the movie. And this one, there's an actual voodoo witch who like disappears, reappears, turns them into old Greg. Like, what the hell is going on?
I read a review of this movie from the Nathan Rabin at the AV Club, and he was like, their knowledge of Louisiana seems to be derived entirely from Scooby-Doo episodes.
Yeah, it was crazy. Like, I could not believe that they went to this weird voodoo lounge and did, like, I don't know. It seemed like a very strange, out of place plot point for even for these movies where they do some fantastical things.
I think it's what it is they needed a plot device in order to give us this all-star band like that. Even a regular battle of the band, for there to be like a 30-piece band on stage with all these with Eric Clapton and BB King and like, you know what I mean? Like, it's just it doesn't make any sense. I mean, I know the movie already doesn't make any sense, but I just think that they wanted a plot device for
the movie didn't make any sense. So they had to add a 130-year-old voodoo witch to make it make sense.
And zombies.
They also wanted to give Erykah Badu something to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
It was so bad. This whole part is horrendous.
This is the worst. This is the worst.
It really
this
is.
The
like
worst
the other
part of the whole movie.
The other numbers, as boring as they may have been, some of them were okay, and some of them actually sounded like talented. Like the singers, at least you know can sing, and okay, fine. But when you get to this whole last act, it's just atrocious.
It's real bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So she says you have to sing this certain, like, I don't remember what it was, like a certain type style of music. And he was like, nope, we can do all these other different kinds, but we're not doing it. We don't know how to do that one. And then she turns them into zombies. And then they can do it.
Yeah.
And then they're stuck like that until the actual show.
I for one, was offended by the use of green face.
Totally. Well, have you guys seen that sketch, that old Greg?
No.
You don't know old Greg? Oh, no? My gosh. Some of the listeners will have seen it, but there was this, it was from some kind of sketch show, not one of the ones. Is it not the Whitest Kids You Know? I can't remember which sketch it's from, but one of those sketch shows that's not one of the main ones did it, or it may have been like a Canadian or a different country or something, but it's this kind of thing that went viral, this character, Old Greg, who lives in a swamp. And if you've ever heard someone say, like, have you ever drank Bailey's from a shoe, or do you love me, or Curly Jefferson? There's all these, like, these phrases that come out of this sketch. I'll have to send you guys the link. It's really weird, but he's this swamp creature named Old Greg, and he is painted green, and that's what it reminded me of. Once you see the sketch, you'll understand
The Mighty Boosh.
Yes
I've never heard
they,
of it.
Do they say
it's
that?
Probably like an Australian sketch show or something. It's a but yeah,
either way, they become zombies, and somehow, like, they stay
why does she
zombies
freeze
until
them? why
I don't know.
They were all going to stick around for this competition. Why did they make it a plot point for her to freeze them into stone, and then they go on and she unfreezes them, other than to, like, make Dan Aykroyd continue his sentence from before she turned them? Like, I don't understand the point of that. Did that make sense to anyone?
No.
It's funny because they're frozen. I don't get it.
Yeah.
But then they unfreeze them before the big show.
Yeah. Yeah, it never did anything. It didn't stop them. It didn't change them. It literally, like, they weren't leaving and they had to freeze them. Like, for some reason, either it got cut or whatever. But, like, there was a plot point where they're like, oh my gosh, they're frozen. But it doesn't make a difference.
Doesn't matter at all.
Yeah,
so,
it was just the ending
of the first movie.
It was just to make them film this Caribbean number, Funky Nassau, which is easily the worst number in the film. In a film with bad musical numbers, this is the worst one.
And it's clearly the most offensive, and I can't even tell you for all the reasons why, but I just know it's offensive.
Right, because of the green face.
Yeah, it's just offensive. So there's 50 musicians that sing one song terribly, and then...
Yes, and then they win, but then they have to get out of there.
Nobody wins. So, everyone loses that watched this movie.
That's true. You're not wrong. You're absolutely right. So you've got the Catholic Church after them. You've got we talked about Daryl Hammond and the...
Oh, yeah. He died.
Confederate soldiers.
He died.
Yeah, he got blown up. You're right. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, he got blown up.
A boat full of explosives that they were going to go do some terrorist act or something.
They're going to blow up banks.
Landed on him and he's dead. Like, he comes out unscathed. They should have put him in a full body cast or something if they want to do a joke.
But I guess the joke, that's a callback to the first movie, right? Where Carrie Fisher is constantly blowing up the Blues Brothers, but they always get away.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that was...
That's what I took it as.
Okay, maybe, but it's a bad callback because at least they have, like, soot on their faces.
Right.
And they're like, they look like a little disheveled. I'm just saying that Daryl Hammond showed up looking in pristine condition like he did in that first scene without being blown up. Like,
totes.
Like, there was no joke about it. He was just there because they're like, oh, we've got Daryl Hammond, let's bring him back. Right.
And is Daryl Hammond on SNL at this point?
Yes.
In 1998?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's why he's in there.
Yeah, I guess that's true. I guess Clinton's president, so that makes sense.
Yeah, and he was on there for like 20 years or something. I mean, he was on there for a long time.
He's on there now.
He's the announcer. They don't use him on screen anymore.
No, he can't. Didn't he?
Oh, that's not. He shows up for something. He shows up as Clinton every once in a while.
Oh, every once in a while, but they haven't used him for a while.
Yeah. So he kidnaps a kid. He abducts a kid. He already has an Amber Alert out for him. And the happy ending is he kidnaps this kid.
Yeah, that's the end of this movie. Is he and this kid who is mimicking him the entire time. And I don't know if he was like being a douchebag and mimicking him, or if they were supposed to say like, no, he's just like you.
I thought there was gonna be a plot point where it was really his kid.
That was a okay.
That's how you. That's how you get
that.
Him out of the whole abduction kidnapping thing. Is it's like, you are his only blood relative. Do you want to adopt him since you're the next of kin? Like, that would have actually made. I thought that's
how it's his kid. He doesn't have to adopt him.
But legally
take over custody.
If he doesn't.
I see.
So that's the only way I thought he was going to get out of the whole kidnapping thing, because he kidnaps him. Like, you can't just. I'm not saying the kid went against his will, but he's a kid. You can't just. Do that
you can't just find a kid and take them
talk about not knowing how to end a movie. This is a terrible ending with them driving away and it just ends. Like,
yeah,
I picture Landis being like, yeah, credits.
There's no resolution. There's no getting out of the kidnapping thing. There's no, like, even, I didn't even think it was a sweet moment. He, like, just looks at him and he's like, yeah, we're kidnapping you now. And then that's it.
Well, Blues Brothers 3.
Oh, it's horrible. No.
This, when we talk about misbegotten sequels,
yes,
I feel like for the most part, we've gotten, every sequel we've done has been fine.
Oh, you don't remember? Well,
Dream
we
a Little
Dream. Dream. Dream 2.
Oh, we didn't do 2. Yeah, we didn't actually do one. Yeah.
But like, you know, Butch and Sundance and 2000, what was it, 2010? Like all of those.
Heartbeeps 2.
They were solid. Yeah, well, Gremlins 2.
No, I've
Batman Returns.
I've liked all the sequels that we've
This done. Is the first time where I was like, yeah, this shouldn't have been made.
Yeah, this was.
This should not have happened.
Yeah, this is horrendous.
Yeah.
And the weird thing is that you talked, like, Tom, you brought up so many stories about how the first one was a nightmare and ended up being such an iconic movie.
Right.
And, like, this movie didn't have as many of those type of things. Like, I know that there was studio interference, but it didn't have as many of those nightmare situations.
Right.
And it still ended up being a complete mess.
Yeah, it is funny how a movie can be a hot mess as from a production standpoint and still get saved in the editing verse. And yeah, it is interesting the way that works out, that sometimes it ends up working to that movie's advantage for there to be on-set strife, and other times it does. Most times it does not. But
well, and you said that they crashed 104 cars in this movie.
Correct. They crashed.
Oh, that ending sequence, ridiculous.
That is the only. Like, that is another one of the reasons why it feels so cheap and crappy, is because in the first movie, you at least felt like it was, like, there was something real about it, where it's like there's all these cop cars and it's ridiculous,
right.
But it's organic the way that they're chasing them. And they keep doing all this destruction. And this movie, it felt like they were like, yeah, we got to crash 104 random cars, so let's get to it.
Especially because, you know? Like, the first one had, like, some really great car driving stunt scenes, and this has, you know, just basically kind of that one scene where they crash a bunch of cars just because, oh yeah, we got to do that thing.
Yeah, it's just destruction derby. Like, it was just like a pileup,
which I forgot to add to my list of repeat gags, you know.
Right.
But
that's
but,
because it wasn't considered a gag because it's terrible.
Right, yeah. but yeah, and then they throw one more car on the pile just to beat it, and then that record stood until G.I. Joe, The Rise of Cobra, they destroyed 112 cars. So
I've seen that movie.
They no longer have the record.
I've never seen one of those G.I. Joe movies.
Well, I know what we're doing next week.
I saw one of them.
There's only two.
Yeah, I've never seen them.
I think I only saw the second one, the one where they had to force Channing Tatum to be in it.
Well, yeah, yes.
Don't they
had
kill
to,
him in
Bruce
the first
Willis.
Two seconds?
Yeah, they had
of the
to figure out a way to bring his character back, and then he didn't even want to do it, but he was such a big name by then that they had him under a contract so they could make him come back. Yeah.
and they had the Rock.
Yeah.
The Rock other, the Rock's in the second one.
Yeah. Other than that, and Bruce Willis, because he's G.I. Joe.
He's G.I. Joe, that's right.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah, Blues Brothers 2000.
What a mess.
Yeah, like it's.
You don't want to watch that movie.
I don't even think they sell this in the House of Blues gift shop. It's that bad. Like they.
You know, I was looking on Vudu, and I was like, I can buy it for 15 or rent it for $4.
Decisions. No, there wasn't.
Get this thing off of my. Don't tell anybody that I rented this.
Oh, I wish you would have just gotten the free Stars trial or the 1 month for $1 or whatever. I'm sad that you had to pay $4
for this.
That's, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
It goes on sale from time to time. And even when it's dropped down to like $5, I'm just like, I have no desire. And so I was kind of bummed that I'm like, I'm going to pay almost as much to rent it as I could have bought it when it was on sale. But at the same time, for everything I've read about this movie, I feel pretty confident that I'm never going to want to watch it again, and I made the right call.
Could you imagine?
Yeah, me too.
Hey, could you imagine having to look at this in your Vudu library?
Yeah.
No, I'd be pissed. Right? I'd be angry every time I looked at it.
Can you remove a movie from that you've purchased from your library? Call it Vudu. You're like, yeah, no, I don't want my money back. Can you please delete this from my account?
Yeah, you keep the money. Like But
no, thank you.
Yeah. But anyway, so that's the Blues Brothers 2000. You are welcome. So I guess So we should talk about what we're going to do next week as we tackle Misbegotten sequels.
Police Academy 1 through 8.
Yeah.
God. We got to call Spath.
So next week we will tackle, Joe, I think you'll like this one.
Oh, okay.
We're going to do Rosemary's Baby. And,
oh, you're right.
And it's made.
There is a sequel to that movie.
And it's made for TV sequel. Nothing says quality like a made for TV sequel. We will do the made for TV sequel. Look What Happened to Rosemary's Baby, which also stars Ruth, what, McGordon or what's her
McGovern?
Name? McGovern? No, the little old
McClanahan?
Lady. The creepy old lady. It's
yeah,
Ruth
yeah,
something.
Yeah. Yes.
I'm blanking
Ruth
on her name.
McClanahan.
She was also in Harold and Maude. But
Ruth Gordon.
There we go. Ruth Gordon. It's got a legit tie to the first one. Like it's not like sometimes they make those made for TV sequels and there's no connective tissue.
Sure.
But this one, she's
like The Rage, Carrie 2.
Yes, exactly. Where this one there is.
Like when Tom told me, like he asked me just like so we could tease it today. He's like, what do you want to do next week? He's like, Rosemary's Baby. And I'm like, wait a minute, what? Like there's a sequel to Rosemary. Like I told Tom, I've never seen it. I've never heard of it. And I already know it's bad.
You've never seen Rosemary's Baby?
No. I'm saying I've never seen or heard of a sequel, and I know it's bad because Rosemary's Baby should not have a sequel. Like,
no, it should
that's
not.
Just a movie that, like, no, just no.
Yeah, we've told our story.
I've not seen it either, so we are going into this sight unseen. Like, I have no idea. I picked it up on DVD a while back, and I have it, but I have not seen it yet. So. We will see what we're in for. So anyway, that's what people have to look forward to. Until then, let's go around the virtual table and everyone can say where to find them.
This is Joe. You can follow me on the Twitter at JoeyButts, BUTTS21.
This is Kevin. Follow me on Twitter at KevinRBracket.
And this is Tom. You can follow me on Twitter at Roger Kubert or on Facebook at Facebook.com/Tom O'Keefe. Find the show online, Facebook.com/RealSpoilers. While you're there, like the page, join the group. We'd love to hear what your thoughts are. Are you watching these movies along with us or do you not feel the need? I'm just curious what people's thought process is as we go back and tackle these old movies. If they're
I hope if we're watching Blues Brothers 2000, someone's appreciating or listening to these episodes.
Well, I mean, I think they're listening, but I'm just curious if they go and like, do you just like as a listener, do you just dive in and just be like, I don't need to see Blues Brothers 2000, I'll just listen to the conversation, or do you watch the movie just to kind of get your own take and then listen? I'd be interested to know. So, so you can chime over there. Your best place to do that is in the Facebook group, The League of Show Sharers. So you can also find us on Patreon at patreon.com/RealSpoilers, where for $5 a month you get all sorts of bonus content and you help us out and we're greatly appreciative. So anyway, that's it for this one. Coming up next time, Rosemary's Baby. Until then, Ronnie takes Connie to the prom.
Caribbean is a type of music, I regret to say, which has not been, is simply not, nor will ever be a part of this band's repertoire.
Nassau's gone funky. Nassau's gone soul.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight. and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.